if you tell people too much and get way ahead of them, they'll be discouraged and crushed. And if you don't tell them what they need to hear and push them a little, they'll become bored.
Every single message you deliver is really a sales call. Either you are selling or being sold. Salespeople love to brag about their skills. And the truth is, your success in closing sales depends on your skills, your abilities, and finding the right training. And the great news is, you have come to the right place here at the How to Sell Show with your hosts, Dale Bell and Scott Silvenbell. And be sure to join the party at howtosell.live and download your copy of The 10 Common Mistakes Salespeople Make.
I got my good friend Bob Beverly, and he's a therapist, and so I figured, why not get a brilliant therapist on here and ask some questions that really help you as a professional, as an entrepreneur, as a salesperson. So let's start right from the beginning, Bob. Is there a common fear people have about seeing a therapist, and why does it hurt them?
The common fear, I think, is shame. That to admit that you have an emotional problem or a problem in how you're living is somehow utterly disgraceful.
Okay.
When almost every other thing we're not that ashamed of. Am I ashamed that my car isn't perfectly clean? Am I ashamed that I don't have $42 million in the bank? On and on. When it comes to material things, we gladly go and fix it, get a professional to look at it. But when it comes to therapy, we're ashamed. Now, it's partly because the therapy culture, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, it was all about the mentally ill. And you implied, or the world implied, that if you went to therapy, you were mentally ill in the schizophrenic kind of state. Now, schizophrenia is not multiple personality disorder. It just means you have a profound thought disorder. Your life is very filled with fear. Well, there are schizophrenic people in the world. But they're not even the beginning of what therapists usually see,
okay,
unless they're working in a psych hospital. So I believe we're all mentally ill, and there shouldn't be a stigma about it.
And the one thing that I left out was you've done 45,000 to 50,000 hours of therapy with people, meaning you sat on the side of the table listening to their problems that they have going on, or their issues, or their concerns.
Yeah.
Where does shame play into all of this, especially for business people?
Well, I think business people in general have to act like professionals. So they have to put on an appearance that they're cool, that they can handle anything, that nothing gets to them. Although I don't like that phrase. We've talked about that in other places.
Okay.
They have to act invulnerable. Now, I know there's a bit of a trend changing with that, with the work of Brené Brown and her fame with her books. But nevertheless, people can admit mistakes. And I think, just to be stereotypical, it's typical of men not to ask directions, not to ask for feedback.
Okay.
I wrote a month ago on the web, I spent, I think, 1 hour and 8 minutes driving 1.2 miles because I was lost and wouldn't admit it. Now, I don't have GPS on my cell phone.
Yeah.
But it was really in pride. I just thought, oh, the road I want will show up. And where I started out and where I ended up, where I finally got my bearings, it was 6 miles. Well, at any rate, it was some ridiculous amount. Yeah. I wasn't riding a horse and buggy.
You were working at the speed of smell.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, so okay. Didn't stop and ask for directions till after about an hour.
Wow. And like, if we use that as a metaphor for people for training, for getting help, is that typical, especially for men?
Very typical. Like, more women than men come to therapy.
Okay.
And it isn't that women are emotional and men aren't. Men just are, we're more trained to hide our emotions.
Okay.
If you and I were in a meeting and the boss comes in and just screams at everybody, you and I would be trained to smile and make a joke. Now, we'd be hurt, we'd be scared, but we're not going to tell anybody we're hurt and scared.
Yeah.
Whereas the women might more likely cry. Not because they're crybabies. we're actually more hurt than them. We don't dare show our emotions. So there's a 40-foot wall between us and the world because we are so scared.
So this rolls in perfectly since we're talking about feelings and emotions. You know, how can therapy help somebody relieve the pressure of rejection on a cold call?
So the basic view I have of people is what novelists have had and the ancient people had, that we're not machines, that in our soul, inside us, is a vast array of complexity. Most of us, by the time we're five, have had 12,000, I think it's like around 12,000 little bits of rejection. No, you cannot play on the street. And 5,000 pieces of affirmation. That's just so a kid will be civilized. Now, that's not taking into account an abusive home,
yeah,
where the proportion of like affirmation to rejection is way lower. In other words, too much rejection, terrible rejection. I don't know if I quoted you T.H. White, it is fatally easy to make a young child think they are terrible. So when people walk into a therapist's office, they often don't know the, what I call the oil well that's inside them, where they feel it in a second, the pain from their childhood or the pain from their history, and don't know how it affects them. So when people get a rejection and a cold call, and it really hits them, it's hitting more than that moment. So to understand yourself, to have self-awareness, it is a profoundly complex, intricate journey. And when you know yourself, you can manage that stuff better.
Okay. When we take a look at how people interact with each other, and they say something like, face your fears, why is that bad advice?
Well, let's see, face your fears. People don't need, in a way, people don't need to face their fears. Their fears probably already have them by the throat. What they need to face more is what they want. What is your goal? Want to make more money? Want to make more sales? And it's like looking away from the fear to the goal that's outside you or a goal that's inside you. And that has to motivate you beyond simply facing your fears. Now, there's nothing wrong with, implicitly, there's nothing wrong with facing your fears. Like, I have a bone disease. I am afraid to ride a bike. That makes sense. I broke 26 bones. I don't want to crash on a bike. Would never ride a motorcycle for $1 million. Would never jump out of a plane with a parachute for $42 million.
Okay, it's a okay. Nice round number.
So I'm facing my fears, but if I just sit around all day and just do nothing about the fear or don't admit it, then my brain's just like rattling like a squirrel in a cage.
I know there's a saying, you know, admitting your problem is the first step. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, except, just to be a little technical, even to see the problem is so difficult, let alone admitting it's a usually bigger problem than we think. Just to be aware of it. Like, I remember when I was a young therapist, I told one of my supervisors, John, people are so blind. He said, Bob, that's what keeps us in business. Yeah. And I'm no different.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell by some of the stories I've said and written about that I know I messed up and it took me a long time to see how messed up. It took me even longer to see my strengths and to really own them. So it isn't just that you have to see your problem, you have to admit it, you have to realize how big it is, but it's not so big that you should be ashamed. Everybody, once you understand your story, you can understand why you're so scared. For example, I used to hardly ever smile when I was younger. Because of my bone disease, my teeth aren't as white as, you know, a movie star's, whose is. And I took my son to a checkup at a big hospital about 2 hours from here because he inherited my bone disease. And the doctor just casually asked me, do you sweat a lot? and let me look at your teeth. And I said, why? And he said, well, people with your bone disease usually don't have the whitest teeth. Now, he talked to me about it. Now, I did sweat a lot. Didn't know why. Didn't know why my teeth weren't as white as I wanted them to be. And he talked about it so casually. It was like a therapy moment for me. I was traveling on Route 84 from here to there. When I got done, Route 84 had not fallen through the cracks.
Yeah.
The world kept going. He didn't shame me. He just said, let me look at your teeth. He did. He didn't fall over. He didn't say you're the ugliest guy in the world. In that moment, actually, ironically, and with surprise, like I wasn't planning this, that started me on a venture of going to get my teeth taken care of more. And that's the way life works.
Yeah. Now, so we talked about a couple of cliches. What are some other bad cliches that people use that really do hurt them?
Cliches that hurt them in terms of rejection?
In rejection or just in mental health. I know that you have a couple that you really don't like.
Yeah. I mean, the one I hate the most, I think, is don't let it get to you.
Okay.
Because as I've shown you before, you know, would I really hit this guy? No, I have a bone disease. He was a former football player in high school.
Yeah.
But you knew something was coming, but yesterday when I did this with you, you didn't know I was going to hit you.
Sure.
Well, we're walking along in life. Now, thankfully, good things happen. Like that doctor talked to me about my teeth like it wasn't the most disgraceful thing in the world. Well, bad things happen to us, and usually they come out a great surprise, and we're hurt, and there's nothing that we can do about it when out of the blue someone we love or someone we don't even know hurts us with an insult. We don't let it get to us, it does. Like, hold out your hand, and if you're just listening to this, I'm just putting very light pressure on Scott's hand. But you can't make that hurt you.
No, right? It's not going to.
Right. And just like the other thing, if I squeezed your hand because I've got an iron grip, it would really hurt you. You're not letting it get to you. And if I said to you right now, you know, sitting close to you, you're really kind of ugly. If you thought I meant it, you care about me, I care about you, it would hurt you. And if I say, oh, I let it get to me, or you say that, then you're adding to your pain. It's just another way that we are blamed as victims rather than people seeing that our hearts are so tender, just like our eyeballs. It's like, you know, often the one who does the hurt says, oh, Scott, you're so sensitive. Then the sensitive person is blamed rather than the people who are just terrible at advertising in terms of how they hurt one another.
And we let them get away with it.
Well, it depends. If for example, we're doing this program, and say I'm the one in charge of it, and I'm going to give you $500,000 for interviewing me, and I hurt your feelings, and you know that if you come back at me, I am going to not give you a $500,000 check, then what happens is you're going to decide I'm going to let him get away with it because I've got the power.
Okay.
Now, if you have $42 million in the bank, you might not want the $500,000, and you might just say, you know what, end of interview. It's always a struggle that we probably make in a thousandth of a second of, can I go to the mat with this person? But again, you know, if Mike Tyson comes in here and wants to insult me, I'm not going to say anything. I would not like his left hook to touch my body.
Makes sense.
Okay?
Yeah.
So I didn't let him get away with it. I would actually be smiling, saying, nice to meet you, Mike, and yeah, you are really good looking. Okay? So it's not that we let them get away with it. It's we're calculating what's in our best interest.
Okay. That does make some clarification.
And again, see, that doesn't have, and I think this is accurate. I'm not just trying to be nice to people. This is the way things are. It's the way it happens inside us. And it respects the victim and gives the victim more power. Like, and what really happens inside all of us, when we supposedly let people get away with it, that isn't what goes on in our head. What goes on in our head is, I don't like what you said to me. I'm not going to be as nice to you. And our future is a little bit more scarred.
Okay, that makes sense. When we take a look at business life, how does a person keep enthusiasm for business over time? How do they keep that fire going, and where does the recharge come from?
It can come from all kinds of places. I'm glad I remembered that story about that doctor and me. All right, so people have to look for the surprising, fresh, wonderful things that will happen to them that will uplift them. If people stay connected with enough good people, those good people will do things that will help you, you know, help you feel like carrying on. So it isn't all internally motivated. If you have a good family, you wake up and see your children, or you wake up and see your spouse or partner, you see friends, you do maybe something spiritual that uplifts you every week. You have to have a sense of openness to how life is going to help you. I believe going to therapy every week is very helpful for people if they find a good therapist. I believe that people have to keep reading, and they have to keep feeding themselves with all the brilliant wisdom that is out there in the world. They have to have fun. Enthusiasm, I think, yeah, in the Latin it means like God with us, so it's no joke to say you're enthusiastic. So enthusiasm is a very important reality, and it's so easy, especially as we get older, to get tired and just go through the motions and not even know that you're going through the motions. So I think we need someone in our life, even if it isn't a therapist, that we can ask them, have I lost my fire? Am I enthusiastic?
Okay. Is that a common thing you see when people come to you? They have some issues with their enthusiasm and they don't realize it?
Well, they usually realize it. They wouldn't put it that way. They're usually depressed or anxious. Gotcha. Or defeated or cynical. Usually because the world's beat them down.
Is there something they can do to supplement with the therapy that they're doing to make it better?
All that I said, and there's way more. There's exercise, there's meditation.
Okay, those are the two things I was looking for from
you. And everybody has a unique thing, I think, that uplifts them. For example, if I'm tired and discouraged, all I have to do, because I program myself this way, is have like either a 20-minute nap or a 2-hour nap. Then I wake up, have a shower, and then go to the gym. And then I have a shower even though I'm going to go to the gym, because the shower wakes me up.
Sure.
Then I go to the gym and I can tackle almost anything.
Okay. When you see people lose the battle with integrity and go for the side of greed, where is it that people lose out with that issue? Where do they find their biggest problem?
Well, greed is a really complex factor in our society, and it's a really complex factor inside us. When does my hunger for books become greedy?
Okay.
When is it just, no, that's the way I am uplifted? What might be greedy to you is not greedy to me, and so on. But we at least should talk about it. Now, most people that are greedy are defensive, and they're not going to talk about it. And so they're not going to ask what really satisfies them. I can't get no satisfaction. Can you admit it? Like the Rolling Stones did. And the great thing about therapy, it's a place where we can ask, what I'm going after, is it really satisfying? And that's worthy of a discussion. Now, that's where a really good therapist can help, because hopefully they're moral, so they're not just a landing field for all behavior is excused, but they're also moral, but also can judge you, but not in a way that you get the sense that they're superior or condemning. They're just saying this won't work.
Okay.
I remember talking to one of my favorite colleagues. We were talking about sex. And I said to him, I think sex is about the wish to be adored. He said, yeah. Yeah, that's true. But it's also a lot about greed.
Interesting.
And he said, you know, a lot of people have a sexual life that is greedy and they're never satisfied. So internally we have to know, like, do you have enough? And you don't. If you have enough, do you know it? So that you're counting your blessings rather than seeing yourself coming back from the shopping mall while you're on the way to the shopping mall.
All right. That makes sense. Now, I know that we've talked a lot as we were driving around. You told me you're in BNI. That's a networking group where you give referrals, correct?
Yeah.
And in your role, you were an educational coordinator, or are an educational coordinator, and you have been for 7 years when the average is 1.5 years. So what, you're almost four times the amount right now, and a half times the amount.
Yeah.
Why have you succeeded in that role, and what have you learned that you wish people would ask you?
I think I succeeded because before I became a therapist, I was a minister, so hopefully I was a good speaker.
Okay.
These people told me that I was. And then I have all this therapy experience, which is really about what goes on in people. And then I had a side interest in marketing, so I'd already done a lot of marketing, read a lot of great marketing stuff. So I brought a lot to the table. Plus, as you can tell from my stories, I don't think I'm perfect. And they know, because I'll tell them stories about how crazy I still am, even though I had 7 years of therapy, and four of those years I saw seven therapists a week for my training. I'm still a little crazy, okay?
Okay.
So they appreciate my gifts. And what I would say I learned more from this experience is I really saw that you can't separate our personal life from our business life. And the way we live in our lives really affects our business. Because if you're going through a divorce and your kids don't like you, and you haven't seen your friends in 2 years because you're just consumed by work, then that's going to come across no matter how much money you're making. And you won't feel your own integrity. And so I believe that I hate to use the word secret, but I believe the clear light, once you see it, is that we have to live as good as we can in most areas of our life because that's what really energizes us.
Okay. Now, you know, if I take the view that you have had 4 years of therapy, you had seven therapists at one time, and that is your role as what you do right now, and you still say that we need therapy, then the average person, if they took a look at that, should say, look, you know what? If somebody who does this every day for a living gets therapy and gets advice, I should as well?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Because actually, in my view, everybody's a therapist. You do what I do every day. You listen to people and you give advice to them. And often it's about not just how they are as salespeople, like in just what we call business, but you're actually telling them, you know, you're really negative. And now you're hopefully have thought about it so that you can say that in a way that isn't going to crush them.
Okay.
Okay. So everybody, in a way, is a therapist. So everybody needs to understand you're going to try to manage your soul in a way that you don't hurt yourself and in a way that you don't hurt others. All right? And a great little quote from a professor of psychology at Harvard when asked, what have you learned from 25 years of doing therapy and being a professor of psychiatry at Harvard? He said, what I've learned is, if you tell people too much and get way ahead of them, they'll be discouraged and crushed. And if you don't tell them what they need to hear and push them a little, they'll become bored. and to find that intricate spot where you're just a little bit ahead of someone, telling them, you know, you can fix this area of your life, then they feel aware and they feel not like, oh my God, you're such a loser. But if you don't tell them, then the whole thing just gets boring and lethargic and unfresh.
Okay.
All right. So everybody's a therapist, and the only difference is I therapists like me just are doing it professionally. So hopefully we have some skills that are part of the profession, but a lot of people could read a really good therapy book.
Okay. Now, since we talked about the therapist role, what's one or two ways that a therapist can help somebody even out that roller coaster that's going on inside of the mind? You know, we got the book. Does it come from asking questions? Does it come from somebody telling the story and just getting it off their chest? How is it that a therapist can help even that roller coaster out that's going on in the mind?
Well, the major thing is that the therapist just listens, and I shouldn't say just. It's that the therapist profoundly listens to the story, and the person knows that they are being listened to with respect and the attentiveness and patience of someone who really cares, and that is so profoundly healing. It's sort of like you have to experience it to know it. That simply calms people down to be so listened to, so heard. Then for them to be told, or if they discover it themselves, that's fine. Oh my land, I'm depressed because I'm what? I'm not being nice to my wife. And, you know, and let's just say, you know, you have that awareness. I'm depressed because I'm not being nice to my wife. She isn't being nice to me. That leads to a depressing home. We're sad and discouraged. Depression is swallowed anger. It can be other things, but let's just say it's that in that famous phrase. So when people realize that, they can do something about it. And they didn't even know it was going on. So you're listened to. You figure out things. If you act on them, you become a different person. The phrase for this is called transmuting internalizations. And what it means is you internalize the light that you saw, you hold on to it, and that light spreads inside your soul. And what I hope as people listen to this and anything, you know, we've done another program together, is that I hope people take the light that you've shared, the light that I've shared, and that one, it could be just one piece of light. Someone will go, oh my God, that so applies to me. And that one light will really make a difference. And hopefully they're going to get more than one bit of light.
True. Now, how does the world of sex relate to the world of business?
I said that to you last night. You know, we haven't even talked about sex, and we're males. Now I'm 62 in January, January 5th. Can send a gift. But here's how it relates. Sex, like I said, is about being adored. It is one of the most powerful good forces in the world. When people are really loved by someone who they love, whether it's of the same sex or opposite sex or all the variations thereof these days, it's hard to ignore that if someone's in your room and you're both naked and you're making love and it isn't just lust, the depth that that does for the human soul in terms of like really feeling this person loves me, this person accepts me, it sends a calmness and a confidence to the soul that the poets write about. And because of Masters and Johnson, the whole world of sex and sex therapy, and of course porn, reduced people to body parts. And the best sex is really about our soul. It's soul-affirming, life-affirming. And this doesn't mean that if you don't have sex, you can't find that love and that good feeling in other ways. But it is an avenue of confidence that really can help people. And if people are living with people, the great danger is that they will become familiar with one another, won't go on a date every week, won't do something surprising or fresh, and then their sexual relationship will grow stale, and then it spreads a dullness and an indifference and a defeat in the human soul that cannot be overestimated. Like, I'm happy, you know, that I grew up, to some degree, I'm happy that I grew up in a Christian background, but I know how loony, you know, some of the Christian world is. I know the bad parts of the Bible that I wouldn't want to be read at my funeral.
Right.
But there's amazing wisdom in the Bible. And there's even this verse that nobody knows about. St. Paul basically tells people in a book called 1 Corinthians that if they're married, they should have sex about once every 2 to 3 days. Otherwise, they're leaving room for the devil. Who would know that's in the Bible? Okay, but he had profound awareness of the biological, psychological need for steady sex. All right, now I know all the reasons why people might not want sex if they're married to a brute. I'm not advocating stupid thinking.
Yeah.
Okay, but I am saying, I'll just say frankly, that here is an avenue that men and women can really boost one another's self-esteem and boost their own by seeing their blessings, because it's all part of building a kingdom, and that's one important part of the kingdom. It's not everything, but it's way more important than our jokes imply.
Okay.
Serious business.
You know, most people would be scared to talk about that in the business setting or even just bring it up.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you sharing that wisdom.
Yeah, and it's easy for men and women just to joke about it. And we joke, I think, to cover our pain. It's an area where most people have been hurt romantically and sexually. And doesn't mean people should sit around and talk about it in public. It's sacred turf. They should talk about it where it's safe, but everybody needs to talk about it.
You know, as people age, they become frantic. You know, why does this equate to greed? And this will be the last question for today.
Well, if you picture greed, you don't picture a slow person, methodically, carefully, thoughtfully thinking, do I really want this? You picture a little bit of speed. Someone's going to the mall or on the internet and they're buying thing after thing after thing after thing and not really thinking about what's going on with them. And what our talk has been about today is really about thinking through things, not settling for a cliche, and really thinking what works, what doesn't work, what's really going on in me, putting words to it, being heard, being open to insight, doing something about it. And greed, the older we get, if the way we cover our fear of death is just by buying more stuff, that doesn't really answer or solve the problem of death, because you're not really addressing it. So as we get older, we'll get a little more frantic. Like, I'll be honest, in my life, I've had 2 open heart surgeries, so I've been pretty close to what I hope is the pearly gates, and had to really think, this could be my last morning on earth. And it's scary, but I notice, probably because of that, or just normally because of my age, I can like be reading a book and like think, oh my God, there's not enough time to read this book, I want to read 10 others. So then, instead of staying in the present, realizing I don't have forever, but what can I do? Well, I should calmly read this book. But you have to think through that rather than being frantic. Now, who wants to admit this? I've never seen this talked about in a business setting. But that sort of franticness is what I believe runs a lot of midlife crisis that business people create in their life, because it's easier to throw a grenade in a room and run than to sit in that room and quietly ask what satisfies, or to really face mortality. So rather than do that, people just make a mess. Then they have to spend the next 10 years cleaning up the mess. It's actually easier to clean up that mess than it is to really face, we have a limited time, and to face, how are we wasting time in the one time that we have on this earth?
Okay. Bob, you're a brilliant guy. Awesome therapist. Where can people get in touch with you?
I'm easily available on the internet at bob@findwisdomnow.com.
Okay. And from that website, if they want to schedule a session with you for therapy, they can do that?
Yeah, they can email me. Okay. And they can also sign up. I write a weekly column about this sort of stuff called The Dig. It's a dig for wisdom. They can sign up for that. And also, I'm a phone call away if I can give my phone number
out. Most definitely. Just know that this is going on the web. So yeah. Put your boundaries of times that you're willing to accept phone calls.
Well, this is my office, so they can phone my office any time of day. 845-855-9701. As you've taught me, I'll say it again.
Okay.
845-855-9701.
Bob, thank you so much. Now, for you, this type of wisdom just doesn't come from anywhere. It takes somebody who's really going to tell you what's going on. So, you know, if you really do need help and there's something you're struggling with, you're like, please call somebody. You know, get a hold of a doctor, get a hold of a therapist, and get the help that you need. If there's one thing that I can let you know, is it really does help out your life, and it's not just about business, it's about living life.
Couldn't agree with you more.
All right.
Thanks for checking out this episode of the How to Sell Show. You can join the party at howtosell.live to get the show notes, links, updates on new episodes, recordings of previous episodes, articles, as well as videos. You may not know this sales secret, but sharing this episode with a friend will bring you good luck. See you soon. Mahalo.